veteran
and his emotional support Canadian
scream into the void about the Mormon Church. If you want to reach us, we are on Instagram at NotSoPeterPriesthood.
And you can email us at NotSoPeterPriesthood@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. Enjoy!
Bye! I never know when it's actually recording. I'm always just like...
Just vibing
until it says, by attending this meeting, you consent to being recorded.
Yeah. Consent is important, Dusty.
It is important. You have my consent to record me. I'm vocalizing my consent.
Well, I would hope that I've had it for this whole time, because it's been like how long?
Like 100 episodes? Oh, no.
Almost 120, something like that. Anyway.
That's crazy. Who thought we had that much to I mean, I knew that we had that much to talk about to each other. But
yeah. What about this? I really didn't think that. I don't know. I've been thinking about that a little bit lately. I'm like, I didn't think that this would go this long.
Seriously.
But,
it's supposed to be like a limited series.
Some listeners are probably like, maybe it should be a limited series.
Like, you need to sort out your lives. How's your weather?
Oh. Well, apparently groundhogs don't know shit. So
we don't have a groundhog here because they actually hibernate until May in Alberta.
Oh.
And so it would be like animal cruelty to like force them out or whatever. So y'all are dumb because clearly we had like a mascot and he popped out and was like, more winter, and we were like, yeah, no shit.
See, they usually, the groundhog, he always says more winter, and we're like, okay, cool, yeah. This year, got the hopes up and said, oh, spring will be early, and then, yeah, we had, like, a little fake spring, and it was nice. It was, like, 50 degrees for a little while there. I was like, oh, short sleeves, who are you? And then,
it's 50 degrees, I have to calculate, hold on.
Oh, sorry. It's
hold on, I got it. 50 Fahrenheit 2 Celsius is 10 degrees. Yeah, we were sitting about that too last week. Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, and the grass was peeking out. It was brown grass, but it was peeking, you know. And then and then yesterday, well, Friday and Saturday, it just like bloop, dumped snow.
Yeah.
It was white out, so that was fun.
I feel like we're in the same storm cell, because, yeah, I had complete bare lawn on Friday, and now there's a foot of snow sitting on it, so I said a foot for you.
Thank you. I appreciate
Instead
that.
Instead of 30 centimeters.
That's, what is that? 30 centimeters would be 2 wiener dog sizes. Metric system. Oh, 2 wiener dogs piled up on top of each other. Like the. Because Americans will do anything to not use the metric system.
It's no 2 wiener dogs left. Oh, I'm actually crying. That's hilarious.
I'm over it, though. I need a vacation where the sun is shining. And
I honestly don't mind the snow. I don't like the fact that there was like a 70 car pile up, like just outside of Calgary. That part I don't like.
We
about
had
it.
Huge power outages like down south of me. Yeah. So what I was worried about. I was like, please stay on. Please power, just stay on. Be nice.
Yeah. Seriously. Oh, it's wild. Winter. And people are like, oh, so much for climate change. I'm like, you don't understand. More chaos. Like, climate change means more chaotic weather.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you for that.
We had thunder during the snowstorm, which was wild to me. I would never heard that before.
Yeah, it's scary when that happened.
Yeah. Anyway, you're avoiding the topic, aren't you?
Never. What? Elizabeth, how dare you?
So I got to thinking about how much this was like rammed into my brain as a seminary student.
Seminary.
We're gonna talk about the pride cycle. I feel like it's something that I just like, I don't know, like I remember just hearing about it all the time, and maybe it's just because it was like that just stuck out to me. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, because I feel like there's like specific things that really like stuck in certain individuals' heads a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. But all right. So this is from a talk called "The Pride Cycle." Ooh, by he's so inventive.
Hey, that writer.
By Wilford W. Anderson from November 2017. It's a talk he gave at BYU.
Who's she?
I don't know. He's in the 70, I think. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Anybody past like 2005? I have no idea. No idea.
Yeah, there's I'll like get glimpses of General Conference or anyway, get glimpses of General Conference now with my parents, you know, and I'm like, who the fuck are you? Like, I'm like, oh, you're an apostle. So you're one of the big guys. I should.
That's when you start to realize it's been like a long time. Yeah. Like 2005 was almost 20 years ago.
Oh, okay. We're moving on from that. Stop that. No negativity.
I'm old, Jake.
Okay, we're moving on, Dusty. all right, so he says, there's a prevalent pattern of behavior in the Book of Mormon. Wait, so before we go, what do you know of the pride cycle?
I know that people are good, and then they get prideful and turn to wickedness, and then they get destroyed. And then it starts all over again. They become humble, and then they start to be good again, and then they get prideful, and then they get wicked, and then they get destroyed. That basically sure. Sort of?
Basically.
I didn't listen in seminary, so.
Yeah, you were the.
I was the Slurpee Queen, so.
Slurpee Queen, yeah. So that's pretty good. You're missing a step. You're missing a step, but it's fine. I will tell you all about
all
it.
All the tests in seminary were open book, so, you know.
I would hate to be the guy that failed seminary, honestly. Like.
I think it was mostly attendance-based. If you showed up at some point, you got a mark for the day, I think.
I remember doing mastery scriptures, and we did have tests, but it was, like, super easy. Anyway.
Yeah, open book kind of concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yay for release time seminary.
Barf. Separation of religion and state, what?
Not Christian, baby.
All right, so he says there is a prevalent pattern of behavior in the Book of Mormon commonly referred to as the pride cycle. It is repeated so frequently that one begins to sense that the Lord and his prophets are trying to teach us something important, that perhaps its inclusion in the record is meant to be a warning from the Lord to each of us in our day, or maybe Joseph Smith made it up. He says, pride is a serious sin. In fact, in the Book of Proverbs, we read that it is number one on the list of seven deadly sins that the Lord hates. I hate it. like Smeagol.
I was literally about to say, Smeagol. God, we're nerds.
We hate it. Using a clock, okay, so we're having a metaphor, and it's going to be a metaphor you're going to have to remember through the whole thing, okay?
Oh, God, okay.
So, using a clock as a metaphor.
Okay.
You have clocks in Canada, right? Clock, if you can. Using a clock as a metaphor, let's say that the pride cycle begins at 12 o'clock, so up there.
At the top. Ours is at the top too, yes.
Oh, good. Okay, good. We have the same. That's the... I'm crying too. So 12 o'clock is the pinnacle of pride. When we are at 12 o'clock on the pride cycle, we like the Nephites of old. Feel so successful, so intelligent. Why are you rubbing your jaw?
Because I have TMJ and you're making me laugh really hard. This is why I have such resting. My hygienist called me out on it. She was like, oh, you're very, very tender in there. And I was like, yeah. She's like, you just don't smile a lot, do you? Because it's painful. I was like, yes. She's like, you have resting bitch face a lot, don't you? I was like, oh, my life. There hurts when I smile. It pulls those muscles.
Oh.
I don't know. It's fine.
All right. So when we're at 12 o'clock in the pride cycle, we, like the Nephites of old, who didn't exist, feel so successful, so intelligent, and so popular that we begin to feel invincible. We enjoy it when others compliment us on our successes, and we are irritated when others around us receive compliments on their successes. At 12 o'clock, we tend not to listen to the counsel of others. We don't need others. Sadly, we often conclude that we don't even need God or his servants. We bristle at their counsel. We are doing just fine on our own. We forget or we reject what King Benjamin taught, that we are eternally indebted to our Heavenly Father to render to him all that we have and are. Our modern-day prophets have warned us against pride. President Ezra Taft Benson called it the universal sin and the great stumbling block to Zion. I remember not hearing this talk because I think I was too young, but I remember it's still like echoes of it.
They like regurgitate the talks and everything, right? Yeah, like you'll hear about it in Sunday school eventually, or yeah.
Yeah, and you couldn't saying I'm proud of something. You couldn't mm-hmm. say in your testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a, but now it's like totally fine. Like mm-hmm. from I don't know if they've just gone away from that. I don't know. But all right. So President Dieter F. Uchtdorf compared pride to a personal ramiumptum, which doesn't exist. But you know,
that's my favorite word. Ramiumptum.
We're gonna have to do an episode on the ramiumptum. A holy stand that justifies envy, greed, and vanity. However you define its consequences are always the same. It alienates us from God. It pushes us around the pride cycle to 2 o'clock, where we offend the spirit of the Holy Ghost. Initially, we may think that offending the spirit of the Holy Ghost is inconsequential. So we're pushed from the pinnacle of pride to 2 o'clock, you've offended the spirit, and then I think I skipped something here. I did delete stuff here, but I think I missed. I might have over-deleted. he says, interestingly, at 2 o'clock on the pride cycle, if we are honest with ourselves, we really are not that happy. We have this gnawing sense that we are slipping. We try to fight back against the uncomfortable currents of the pride cycle. We cling to the memories of the past successes and insist on putting our trust in the arm of flesh. This is a serious mistake. I think reading this now, it just makes me think of how they're like, oh, ex-Mormons are just...
we're not truly happy. We can never experience... Yeah,
you've been prideful, and now you're just stuck in this place where you seem like you think you're happy, but you're not actually happy.
Have you seen these smile lines?
Yeah. he goes on to, like, talking about how when we offend the spirit, we're cut off from God, and it's like, okay, we get it, blah, blah, blah. But... first of all, the spirit doesn't exist.
Oh no, the make believe is make believe. So no.
Also, it's just like, and then all these examples, like the ramiumptum doesn't exist. What else was there? The Nephites didn't they didn't exist.
I know. It's like, again, it always comes back to Lord of the Rings and just being like, you can learn things from. Like the hobbits, but like you also know that they're fictional mm-hmm. stories.
Yeah.
I just hate that the church is like, no, this is real. I'm like, okay.
It's really happened.
Sure it did. Sure
they cherry pick when it's real, though. You realize,
true.
Like,
yeah.
They're like, oh, but maybe it's metaphorical. Or maybe that part is metaphorical, but the other is real. It's like, so is it all metaphorical? Like,
yeah. They're crazy.
Let's see. The Lord taught J-Dog, for although a man may have power to do many mighty works, yet if he boasts in his own strength and sets it not the counsel of God, and follows after the dictates of his own will and carnal desires, he must fall. We can choose our conduct, but we cannot choose the consequences of our conduct. At 4 o'clock on the pride cycle, we experience the painful consequences of pride. So you've pinnacle of pride, you're feeling all happy and like boastful, whatever, and then you're offended the spirit, and then at 2 o'clock, and then at 4 o'clock, that's where you experience the fall, and where we may lose the job, we may lose the girlfriend or the boyfriend, we may lose the respect of those who matter most to us, we may lose respect for ourselves. Time has a way of relegating the most important among us from the list of who's who to the list of who's he or who's she.
Who is she?
I don't even know her. She doesn't even go here.
Go here.
At 4 o'clock, we come face to face with our own inadequacies. Failures and afflictions are not happy thoughts for any of us, but ironically, we often find that they are great blessings because they tend to push us on around the pride cycle towards 6 o'clock humility. Our journey from 4 o'clock failure to 6 o'clock humility can be strangely exhilarating. We begin to lose our pretensions. We are no longer trying to impress those around us. We begin to see things more clearly and more honestly. At 6 o'clock on the pride cycle, it is not, as one Christian author has observed, that we think less of ourselves, but rather we think of ourselves less. The British writer G.K. Chesterton described the transition when he wrote, "How much larger your life would be if yourself could become smaller in it. You would break out of this tiny and tawdry theater in which your own little plot is always being played, and you would find yourself under a freer sky in a street full of splendid strangers." Ugh. So, yeah, pride. It's interesting. It is good that, and visually, I'm like putting the pride, pinnacle of pride, right across from humility, so like their juxtaposition, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah, they're so like that, opposites of the
spectrum.
Thank you. I'll ask this question when you're done. I'm gonna write it down so I don't forget. You keep going. Okay. I have a question though.
Well, I might answer it later because I've got.
That's what I'm thinking. You might answer it, so I won't ask it yet. You'll be like, wait.
At 6 o'clock on the pride cycle, we become truly humble. We speak often of the great triumvirate of Christian virtues, faith, hope, and charity. He talks about King Benjamin, who is also fictional, but he talks about the being coming as a child, submissive, meek, humble, patient, full of love. Then he tells a story. One of our sons and his wife were struggling with contention, disunity among their children and home. Listen to this especially as a mother, see how this would, how this would go for your family. After counseling together, they decided that pride was the cause. They held a family council on the matter with their children and determined together that humility is what the children needed to eliminate the contention and disunity. To help their children remember to be kind, my son and daughter-in-law placed a chair in the corner of the kitchen and designated it as the humility chair. When a child misbehaved or became upset,
they
invite him to sit in the humility chair for a while until he could reflect and recalibrate. Then he could rejoin society whenever he was ready. And then it says that one day after our son had returned from a long, hard day at work and displayed some impatience with several of the children, one of his little daughters looked at him and said, "Papa, you need to sit in the humility chair," which he did. He reflected, recalibrated, and rejoined society when he was ready.
All right, whatever. I have so many things to say, but it's fine.
I remember doing like a timeout chair, like in a corner, and just briefly, and just because it didn't work for us, we were just kind of like, eh.
We had this really horrific antique chair that was like super straight backed with like the tiniest little seat on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I sat in it one time because it clearly didn't work.
Yeah. Also, it's just like, okay, so you're going to make a spectacle of people that are showing negative emotions, quote unquote. Yeah. Like, instead of teaching them how to process their emotions, you're telling them that you're giving that information, you're sending a message that those emotions are not something you need to process, but they're just bad and shameful and that you shouldn't be experiencing them, and yeah, you just get over it.
Statistically, timeouts do not work for children. They don't work for anybody. Imagine coming home from work and having had like a really bad day from work, and you're just like frustrated and you just need like comfort from your person or your dog, and then being like, you need to go away until you've sorted yourself out. Like, imagine how that would feel.
Yeah.
To a human adult. Now put that in a child who is learning. Like, to send them away with their emotions is so inappropriate. When my kids are like out of control, we say you need to go to this area because it's not safe for you to be around other people if you're going to like throw stuff. But we do, like, when our kids are having like a really hard time, we do kind of like, I think a lot of people, like parenting experts, call it time ins, where we actually like sit down with that child. So we're like eye level with them and we say, what is happening? What is going on that's causing you to feel like this, to act like this? And like 9 out of 10 times, they just are like, they need something and don't know how to ask for it. And so they're having a blow up because they're children and don't know how to be like, I'm frustrated. I had a bad day. I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Like, they're human beings.
Yeah, weird. So, they don't know how to regulate their emotions yet.
Strange. So strange that they would not come out of the womb just knowing how to be like, you know, imagine having to be taught how to be a human being. So weird.
Weird.
Yeah, super weird. Because like, you wake up on the wrong side of the bed. I wake up on the wrong side. I'm just grumpy. But why would we punish for that? Like... Okay. Sorry. Anyway.
No, that's good. Let's see. So he tells the story about David and Goliath, but I won't, whatever. You and I live in a society in which humility and meekness seem almost counterintuitive. Trash talk, power politics, and end zone victory dances are celebrated while noiseless devotion to God is increasingly ignored and even at times belittled. But let us never forget, brothers and sisters, that humility and meekness are required if we wish to continue our progress around the cycle.
Okay, so I... Why is an end zone dance not appropriate? Why is somebody not allowed to express exhilaration at the fact that they accomplished something?
That's exactly it. Like, why can't I be like I'm finished my bachelor's? Why can't I be like, proud hey, I fucking did that, you know?
That's
like
a lot of work. While working full time, while taking care of Augie, while running a podcast, while having a social, well.
Somewhat. Let's not go that far.
But, you know, that was a hell of a lot of work. My mom is proud of you. Like, you know. So I don't understand this mentality of, like, we have accomplished something. We have worked hard. We have done something. We have accomplished a goal. Why not celebrate that? Like, that doesn't make sense to me to be like, no, you can't. You have to sit quietly and not. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
It goes back to like our talk about like selfishness and like self-care, whatever, self-love. Like, there's it's not prideful. It's just being like, and I'm going to get to this actually. This is good foreshadowing. it's not necessarily like you worked your ass off. You gotta like celebrate your accomplishments.
Mm-hmm. Why is there a tape at the end of the race to break through?
Yeah.
If there's no reason for celebrating, then why have people standing at the end clapping as you, like, it does, it's so counterintuitive to say work hard but don't have a payoff for it.
Yeah. Well, and then but then you're like, you think about like how they're the celestial kingdom, how they think that it's like this ultimate goal. Are they gonna just be like, oh, I made it to the celestial kingdom, I'm just gonna sit here and be like, yay.
Yeah, with my 75 wives and my 8,000 spirit babies.
Yeah,
it's so stupid. Like, I just, could you imagine, like, Patrick works his ass off, you know this. Could you imagine him getting his bonus at the end of the year and be like, no, that would be prideful to take the money that I've earned for a bonus. Could you imagine? Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
No. Like, no, I fucking earned that shit. I'm going to take it and I'm going to do what I want with it. That's my money.
Bitch better have my money.
And it's also the, like, Katie and Sarah bring up several times on their podcast of, like, the surgeons that are doing this, like, life-saving surgery.
Yes.
And everybody says, oh, thank God, we prayed for it, you know.
Yeah, like, God intervened.
God did it. And it's like, wait, but why didn't he intervene for these other ones then?
Yeah,
and also,
my uncle's a surgeon, and he says that all the time. Like, my years of schooling, my years of working, having my own practice, being a surgeon, thank God that, you know, the family prayed in the waiting room.
Yeah, yeah. That had nothing to do with it. It was all God. You know,
Yeah. It's not him, you know, continually learning and reading and studying and staying on top of his, you know, his skills. It's because they prayed in the writing room.
Yeah. And I do get that there needs to be, like, a balance of, like, there is, you know, you can go far off the, like, you know, that's where it does get into, like, boasting and, like, but you, if you're something that you actually have to back up, you know, like, then why not boast about it?
Yeah. Like, and I think there's a balance. Like, our bodies do miraculous things that there's no explanation for. And that's incredible. Like, you know, cancer suddenly disappears or whatever. But there has to be a balance between giving dues to those people who have, like, saved lives and not just negating the fact that they just, they were just in the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I've started to, like, stop being so, like, tried to, like, work through not being, like, self-deprecating and being like, yeah, I fucking did that, you know, like, and taking ownership of things that I do. And, like, when I write or whatever, like, when I create art or whatever, I'm like, yeah, I fucking did that, you know, instead of, like, and when I get a compliment, it's like, for a while there, it's always just, like, a little uncomfortable for me, but, like, I've started to just, like, accept the compliments and be like, thank you, you know?
Yeah. Oh my goodness, I love your shoes. Thanks. They were 75 cents at the thrift store. Like, those kinds of, instead of just being like, thank you, I like them too. That's why I bought them, you know? Like, I love your. This woman at Costco the other day was, like, staring at me, and I was like, oh. And then she started giggling, and I was like, what's happening? And then I realized I'm wearing the same shirt as I am today, my Spice Girls shirt. Like, I love your shirt. I was like, thank you. I love it, too.
It is a great shirt. Let's see. So at 6 o'clock, he also talks. He gives this, like, metaphor.
He's sitting on a train next to a young mother.
We're just like, okay, he says, consider this perspective on what it means to have a broken heart. To break a horse is to train a horse how to be ridden. A broken horse accepts the saddle strapped to its back, the reins placed around its head with the bit in its mouth, and a rider in the saddle. A broken horse has learned through experience how to obey and be responsive to the guidance given by the rider. Only then can a horse be useful and productive. And so it is with a broken heart. A broken heart is one that has been trained through experience to be obedient and responsive to the commands of the master. Only with a broken heart can we be truly useful and productive in the Lord's service.
This gentleman needs to come watch my brother-in-law work with horses, because that man gains the trust of the animal and is the most magical, incredible thing I've ever seen in my entire life. So, anyways.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I don't think this reason why some of this is, like, always stuck out to me is because I'm like, oh, I can't be like my sister, who is very talented pianist. Like, she wanted to be a concert pianist. Like, that was her thing, her goal. And she had a true gift for it. And, like, she would sit down just to play. That was, like, her self-care. Like, that was her time to just, like, let go. She could just, and she could play anything that'd be put in front of her. She'd work her ass off, you know, doing these. It got annoying sometimes because you'd hear her just, like, bleh,
bleh, bleh, you know. The same thing over and over, yeah.
The same mistakes and, like, that kind of stuff. But then, like, once she got it, it was like, oh, that's gorgeous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know where I was going with that, but I think just because, like, she was always so, like, humble about her talents, and it was because that was messaging that came from the church that, like, you're doing this, you need to use your talents and give them to God, basically. Like, mm-hmm. Your talents are only good enough if you're using them for God's work.
Yeah, and you have to attribute them to God. It wasn't her sitting doing those scales over and over and over. It was because God allowed her to be able to play the piano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you got, like, I'm a good artist, and so, like, it just comes naturally to me. Like, I've been drawing forever that I can remember, and, like, people would tell me, you know, they'd have compliment me, and I'd just be like, oh, well, I don't know what to, you know, what do I do with that, you know? And it's just like, well, you can paint, you know, beautiful nature pictures for God, you know. I just
You could have been like the next Greg Olson or
his brother, by the way, I took a class from him.
Oh, really?
Was it Greg Olson? Oh, what? Yeah.
Or was it the Dewey guy?
Dewey, no.
Simon Dewey?
Nope, it wasn't Simon Dewey. It was an Olson. But, it, like, his less famous brother that also, like, paints.
Oh, I didn't even know he had a brother. Exactly. I just know my parents had a lot of Greg Olsons in our house.
Exactly. So, was it Greg Olson? I could be getting this wrong. Now that I have, anyway, one of the brothers of, like, a really famous painter that's LDS, really famous, quote unquote, famous in the LDS world. I took a class from him, and he was a total asshole.
Oh, probably. Asshole. Yeah.
He thought his shit didn't stink. And if you didn't spend 7 hours on one drawing, then you weren't spending enough time on it. I'm like, girl, I have full-time work and a part-time job.
Yeah.
And I have to have a social life amongst this because apparently I'm supposed to get married. You know, like, how am I supposed to spend 7 hours on a painting?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't my only class, you dumbass. Anyway.
Seriously, yeah.
Full rant.
That's so funny. No, yeah. I remember, like, when the Dewey family moved to Cardston, it was, like, this big hubbubaloo about it.
All right. So 10 o'clock on the Pride Cycle is a pleasant and placeful, wonderful place to be, but unfortunately it is also a very dangerous place to be. So this is right before the pinnacle of Pride, so you're like,
oh, okay, so we're getting back to the top of the clock.
Yeah,
or sundial if you're Canadian. Doesn't yeah. work in the winter time, so we don't know what time it is.
That's why I'm here. I'm like, I can be your external hard drive.
Speaking of, you need to get your driver's license renewed.
I do. Thank you. How do I know that? Because I got pulled over this week. Okay, thank you. I'm still good. I got till August, friends, so.
Oh, my God.
So, our associates begin to pat us on the back and to compliment us for our successes. So, speaking of our, like, compliments, okay, compliments can be like a drug. If we are not careful, they can cloud our judgment and create in us, like, an ungodly desire for more and more praise and credit. And if our friends don't give us the credit we so richly deserve, we risk rotator cuff injury from trying to pat ourselves on the back. Yeah. Slowly.
Rotator cuff. Okay, I gotcha. All right.
Do it without dislocating my shoulder. I don't know.
I can do it, yeah. Sounds like homeboy needs to go to some yoga classes. Jeez.
Yeah. Slowly and without fully realizing it, we once again approach the 12 o'clock pinnacle of Pride, so busy looking around for accolades that we fail to look ahead at the precipitous fall that awaits us. For Pride always goeth before a fall, and so the incessant cycle continues. So,
okay.
At 10 o'clock, when it seems like we could do no wrong, when all is going well, if instead of becoming proud, he talks about, I missed it. Okay. How do we get, there are places that you can get out of this cycle, and there's only two places you can do it. It's at the 4 o'clock and at the 10 o'clock.
Oh, okay. So you can step off the.
You step off the ride.
You should have used a carousel instead of a clock, but anyways.
I know. At 4 o'clock, when you're facing failure or affliction and feel like all is lost, if instead of becoming humble, we became angry, if we lose hope or given to self-pity, or if we begin to blame others, including God, for our misfortune, then we will exit the pride cycle, but we will exit downward to destruction, as did the Nephites of old. So if you step off at 4 o'clock, you're fucked.
I'm assuming that's all ex-Mormons got off at 4 o'clock, okay?
Yeah.
That sounded really weird to say out loud. Sorry. I just heard it.
Got off.
We all got off at 4 o'clock.
But at 10 o'clock, when it seems like we can do no wrong, when all is going well, if instead of becoming proud, we become thankful, then we will exit the pride cycle. But this time we will exit upward toward God. To exit the pride cycle at 10 o'clock, we must recognize that every blessing we receive comes from Heavenly Father. He is the source of all that is good in our lives, the fount of every blessing. A successful 10 o'clock escape from the powerful pull of the pride cycle is not easy, but it is possible. Yeah. And he gives an example from the people from the Book of Mormon of people who have escaped the cycle. If you were at 10 o'clock basking in the false light of success, be careful. Avoid the tendency to turn inward and become prideful. As the sacramental prayer reminds us, we must remember him not for an hour or two, but always. We must not take him or his sacrifice for granted. I fucking hate this shit because, you know, like, you got the, oh, everything I do has to, like, be attributed to God. And it's just like, I can't, like, I'm not my own person. Like, everything I do, I'm just, and like,
you're only allowed the breath in your lungs because God lets you have the breath in your lungs. Like, that whole concept of, like, you are nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. I hate it.
That's why maybe we need to talk about the psychology of humility too, because it's just, I feel like it's, very damaging. But speaking of which, did your question get answered in that? Because that's the end of the talk, but
so my question, let me just go back to my little notes app. So does the church say that being in the church means you can avoid the pride cycle? Like, I don't understand.
No, I think,
like, everybody's susceptible to the pride cycle.
Everybody's susceptible to it, and so we have to I guess ideally you're supposed to stay at like this 10 o'clock area and be humbled, but also like thankful for you're kind of successful, but you're not too successful and you're not like focused on your accolades and on compliments and that kind of stuff, which would put you into that boastful 12 o'clock area.
Okay.
You got to stay kind of in that like 10 o'clock range.
So do they believe that like people who are not in the church can be at 10 o'clock, or is it only people who are LDS are capable of sitting at 10 o'clock?
I would venture to say that they believe that LDS people are the only ones that can really have that like happiness of being thankful for God, and like because we've stepped out at either 2 o'clock.
We stepped out at 4 o'clock. Yeah.
Yeah. We 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Because at 2 o'clock you're angry and like you've offended God.
I'm a very angry person. Haven't
and
you
then
noticed?
At 4 o'clock you're what was it? You're failure. You have you're down in the dumps. So like that's where they think the Eskimos live.
We're all
like
stuck
2
there.
O'clock in that 4 o'clock area.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we can't move on with our lives and we have nothing, nothing and no one that gives us happiness or joy.
Yeah, we can't be really happy outside of the church. What?
I don't know. I bought a Spice Girls shirt. I'm pretty happy.
So I wanted to, kind of like what we did with that self-care topic, I looked at like what the psychology world thinks of pride, and I found this article by Dr. John Amadeo. He's an MFT, and it says why pride is nothing to be proud of, which it's interesting because it's anyway, we'll get into it. I'm proud of myself for having graduated from college and for my accomplishments in life. I pride myself on being punctual and for having strong moral values. I'm proud of my beautiful home and garden. These are some of the things that might swell us with pride, but what exactly is pride? Does it serve us or trap us? How does it differ from dignity? Pride derives from the word prude, P-R-U-D. Is that how you would say it?
I would guess so. Or prud.
Which is a late Old English word variously translated as excellent, splendid, arrogant, haughty. It is thought that having a high opinion of oneself might reflect the Anglo-Saxons' opinion of Norman knights who called themselves proud. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary offers multiple definitions of pride. A positive one is a feeling that you respect yourself and deserve to be respected by others. This seems like a healthy aspect of pride, but then there's a feeling that you are more important or better than other people, and inordinate self-esteem. This appears to be a common, not-so-healthy conceit, reflected in statements like, he had too much pride to ask for help, or her pride prevented her from admitting she was wrong. Since pride has conflicting definitions, it may be wise to use a different word to affirm our worth and value. We might believe that healthy self-worth means taking pride in our achievements, but if value is tied to our accomplishments or self-image, it's built upon a fragile foundation. This kind of made me think of that wise man built his house upon sand.
Yeah, yeah.
But just go with me here. There's nothing wrong with feeling satisfaction when we achieve some goal, such as getting a promotion or buying a new car. But if we allow these things to define who we are, we set ourselves up for misery. According to Buddhist psychology, suffering is generated when we cling too tightly to things that will inevitably pass. A more genuine and stable self-worth is based upon validating, affirming, and valuing ourselves as we are. Self-worth is a function of living with dignity, which exists apart from any accomplishments. Achievements are ephemeral and can become a trap. If too much of our attention goes toward accomplishing bigger and better things in order to feel good, then we become addicted to external sources of gratification. So it's similar, but I feel like it's more just like... I feel like
they're talking more about like ego versus, but they're not using the word ego. They're using pride in the place of ego.
Yeah. But they're, yeah, he's going off with like the negative connotations of pride, which is, but like changing that definition in your mind to like be more about being validated and feeling validated and affirmed and valuing yourself as you are. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the difference right there is with the church, they want you to value yourself as who you can be through God.
Yeah.
Whereas psychology and like science would say, no, it's better to just value yourself as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And your accomplishments as they are, not just not like what they can do for others.
I think it's also important to talk about like internal validation as well, like being able to validate yourself and not needing that external validation.
That's what
like,
he's talking about.
Yeah. Okay. I thought so, but I was like, is that what do you?
Sometimes he says too much of our attention goes toward accomplishing bigger and better things in order to feel good. We become addicted to external sources of gratification.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay. So like, yeah, there is a dangerous point of only like constantly needing external validation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a valid concern to have, like, you know, but I also think it's very healthy to be able to accomplish something and feel proud of ourselves and not need to, first of all, give that away to God, right? And not have any sort of ownership over it, but also to be able to say, I did that and I am impressed with myself. I am happy with myself. You don't even have to say I'm proud of myself. You can say I did a good job, right? And validate yourself. Like I always do that with the kids when they accomplish something that they've been working on. I always say, I don't run to them and say, I'm so proud of you. I say, how do you feel? Do you feel happy? Do you feel excited? Do you feel, you know, because I want them to grow up learning that validation comes from within themselves before it comes from anybody else.
Yeah. That's great. That's right. Let's see. Well, I like how he says self-worth is a function of living with dignity, which exists apart from any accomplishments. So, like, kind
just,
of the,
just existing, you should be happy with yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So it says, in contrast, dignity can live inside us regardless of our successes and failures. We don't have to prove anything to anybody or even to ourselves. If an enterprise fails, this doesn't mean that we are a failure. If an attempt to communicate our feelings to our partner falls flat, we might feel sad, but we can feel good knowing we did our best. We can experience the dignity of having reached out to connect or to repair an injury to the relationship. We can experience the dignity of living with integrity regardless of the outcome.
Yeah. Like, even not even in relationships, saying, you know, to my son who got 4 out of 8 on his spelling test, you got 4 right. That means you knew 4 of those words. That means we need to work harder on the other 4 words, but you did good on, like, you don't need to, and this is what I got from my, it's not a failure because you did 4 of those right, you know?
So actually, I just listened to this video, and I think she has a book, and she's been on podcast, Dr. Carol Dweck. I think I brought her up before in the podcast.
I think so, yeah.
But she talks about the power of yet, and like the and how like there's been brain scans. They did the study of these people that have that they were working on doing the growth mindset, and how like, oh, I'm going to take my failures as a challenge instead of like as a, I'm just going to give up, kind of just reframing that so that it's I'm not there yet, but I will get there.
I have the ability to continue to grow and learn and become a fabulous swimmer or whatever it is that you're working on. Right. Yeah. And I think the church they really stamp down that feeling of I can accomplish something, because they don't allow, this is a super weird tangent, they don't allow people to take ownership over things that they accomplish, whether it's good or bad. Like, you know, these bishops who have been, you know, charged with horrific crimes, they don't take ownership over it because it was Satan that led them astray or whatever. They don't take ownership of anything good, and they also don't take any ownership of anything bad. And I think it starts at this very simple, basic thing of you can't be proud of yourself because you didn't do it. Like, you're instilled from childhood that nothing you do is actually you doing it. And that leads into this very dangerous spot of, well, I didn't do it. Satan made me do it. He worked on me, you know?
It's a world without consequences and without and like you're not responsible for your own actions.
Yeah, like I'm thinking of even what's her name, Jody Hildebrand and Ruby Frankie standing up, like giving, like Ruby Frankie gave this long rambling comment during her sentencing hearing, and she was thanking like the police for taking care of her children, and she was thanking the corrections officers, and it, there was a zero, this long rambling emotional, she took zero ownership of her actions. It was all, I'm a victim, you know, Jody brainwashed me into this thinking. And that's very indicative of how the church operates, is that there is no ownership. You are not the ownership of your ability to play the piano really well. That's God's. There's also no ownership of you did an incredibly horrendous thing. It's because you were acted on by influences.
Exactly.
Sorry, that was a super weird tangent. I'm sorry.
No, it was perfect because that's what I was, you reached into my brain and you pulled the bit out what I was trying to get
and
when
the external
I putting
hard
this
drive.
Together. Yeah. So let's see. I'm almost done. Perhaps there's a good reason why pride has been considered one of the 7 deadly sins. We've all been repelled by people who have an inflated view of themselves. They may talk about themselves excessively and rarely show interest in others. They pump themselves up and come across as snooty, exuding an attitude that makes others feel judged. Such overconfidence and arrogance pushes us away. Instead of relating to us as equals, they display an obnoxious superiority that makes us feel small. They have the knack of making us feel ashamed that they refuse to face within themselves. Pride is often driven by poor self-worth and shame. We feel so badly about ourselves that we compensate by feeling superior. We look for others' flaws as a way to conceal our own. We relish criticizing others as defense against recognizing our own shortcomings.
I don't like how I don't like how they're wording it. Like, I get what they're saying, but I'm thinking inflated ego or arrogancy. I'm not thinking, like, a pride of accomplishments. I guess it's just a weird English word. I guess in a different language, maybe I wouldn't have this issue.
Well, so he's going off of that. So there is the feeling that you respect yourself and deserve to be respected by others. There's that definition. That's why that's where there's, like, this dichotomous, like...
Yeah.
He's trying to argue that there's the pride, because it's a conflicted definition, that there's both the good
and the bad
pride, and there's the bad pride of, like, a feeling that you're more important. That's what he's focusing on, is being more, feeling more important than other people.
Right.
Whereas there is, he has recognized that there is a good set way to have pride. And that's what I think is interesting, that the church says that pride is bad altogether.
Yeah. Whereas, you can't feel good about yourself or have an inflated ego.
Right. Whereas this, like, science and even the English language would say that there's a feeling that you respect yourself and that's, and then deserve to be respected by others, and that's a good way to have pride. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because maybe I just don't speak English properly. I do say deckles, so, you know.
Oh, that one killed me.
I love it. I love it. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm a weirdo.
But it is good that he's, I think it's interesting that he's saying that pride is shame driven, and that it's not just because when you are putting other people down, it's not because, and you are getting a sense of pride from that. Hmm. That's obviously a projection upon yourself. Like, yeah. All right. So it says, pride prevents us from acknowledging our human vulnerabilities. This shame-driven pride makes us too uncomfortable to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong, I made a mistake. When pride rules, we believe we're always right. This makes it difficult to sustain intimate relationships. Nobody likes being with a know-it-all. As the light of our dignity shines more brightly, we realize that we don't have to be perfect. Showing vulnerability and humility invites people toward us. We become approachable rather than intimidating. We don't see ourselves as better or worse than anyone else. We recognize that we're all a part of the human condition. We all have strengths and weaknesses.
Okay. Okay. I got it. That makes sense to my brain.
What he wants to do is, instead of using pride, he wants to use the word dignity in that place. And, like, and that would be the positive aspect of pride.
Right, yeah.
And we could just let pride be the negative thing. And yeah. Then dignity can be I take dignity in my accomplishments because I did that. And it
Thinking of it from, like, a mother's perspective of, like, how to change my wording to, you floated on your back in the pool. Do you have dignity in yourself?
I mean, you don't have to do that. I think it's just like a different way to reframe it. If you need to, you don't have to do that. Like,
yeah.
Change your whole vocabulary around it. I think it's just a way to, like, realize and acknowledge that pride can be both things, and it can be taken both ways.
Yeah, no, that makes sense for sure. Yeah. That was very Canadian of me. Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no.
It says, it is freeing to hold ourselves with the dignity that comes from simply being human. We don't need to achieve greatness to have worth and value. We're great just as we are. We might be inclined to pursue excellence because it feels meaningful, enlivening, and expansive, but not because it defines who we are as a person. When pride substitutes for our human dignity, it disconnects us. Affirming our dignity and allowing others their dignity, we become more available to honor ourselves and connect with others as equals. Pride is a burden we don't need. Living with dignity allows us to move more freely through life. That's it.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Yeah, no. Oh my God, what is wrong with me?
I didn't present that to, like, make you think that you need to change the way you're, like...
No.
So I just think that it's interesting to, like, think of... We don't use dignity that much, and I think there's got to be a way to, like, bring in those like aspects of dignity into when we're and framing pride around dignity rather than like framing pride around like being better than other people and putting other people down.
And so I wait, me telling my son that he's the bestest, cutest, most wonderful child in the entire world is not right? Is that, am I damaging him? What?
I mean, that's, he is cute, so.
I know. They both are really cute. And I'm not even saying that because I'm their mom.
Hey, I don't even like kids, and I think your kids are cute, so.
It's the funniest thing.
All right. Well, there was pride, the pride cycle. I think the big takeaway for me is that like the church focuses on that like negative aspect of pride, and I also think of like gay pride. Like that is always something that goes in my head of like we use that word being proud of who you are, a gay person, and it's queer. And there's to me they're using like. They're using it in that framework of a good, the positive aspect of being like, no, I'm proud of who I am because society says that I'm not, I shouldn't be. Yeah.
And it's that, it's coming from that, I have a dignity in who I am as a person, regardless of what the world thinks of me. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very important part of it too, is standing up and saying, this is who I am and I'm not going to apologize for it.
And I have no shame in it. That's, pride has a lot of shame-driven aspects, but if you focus on like the positive side of it and where it's like I'm good enough as I am and society has no say in who I am, then that's the beauty of it, and I think that's the dignity aspect of it.
Yeah, I think so too. It's an interesting word, that's for sure. Thanks for bringing that up. That's like giving me a lot of like food for thought about just like life in general, but also like my parenting. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. You mean I did good?
Gold star.